Hour of the time, and what an hour it is. It definitely is the hour of the time.
Good evening, folks. This is William Cooper. We are going to rerun last night's broadcast. We got lots of calls today, lots and lots of calls of people who said the propagation was bad or some jamming was occurring or something. I don't know what the problem was, but they didn't hear last night's broadcast. And so we're going to run it again tonight. So if you know anybody who hasn't heard it, call them up right now and get them in front of their shortwave radio or get them over to your house and in your living room where they can hear it. Joe Bannister, I talked to him today. He had a previous commitment in his schedule with his children tonight, but he will be with us Monday night. Monday night. He will be back on the hour of the time on Monday night, and that's when we will play out your questions and have him answer them. So make sure that you don't miss Monday night, and it'd be a good idea for you to not miss tonight either. Listen to it again. And if you know, again, listen to me, if you know anybody who has not heard this broadcast, call them up right now. Tell them to turn on the shortwave radio, 7.415 megahertz, or get over to your house right this minute. Okay, without further ado, here's last night's broadcast with special guest Mr. Joe Bannister, ex-Special Agent, Internal Revenue Service. Listen very carefully. And oh, by the way, I've got the volume turned up pretty high so that you can hear him. He has a soft voice. And so I'm turning the volume up pretty high, and that's a warning to you, Alan, and everybody else. Here it goes. This time, right now. Tonight, we're going to have a guest who's just going to blow your mind. If you've had any doubts before about what I've been telling you, or many other people have been telling you, or what you've been reading on special sites on the Internet that devote their entire being, or at least a good portion of it, to the revelation of the illegality of the Internal Revenue Service, then tonight you're going to have your eyes and ears open, and I hope your heart and soul also. Because our guest is going to be Special Agent Joe Bannister, I should say ex-Special Agent Joe Bannister, Internal Revenue Service, until recently, when he discovered that what he was doing was unlawful, unconstitutional, persecuting his fellow American citizens in what he thought was the performance of his duty. He was devoted to government service, like I was for most of my life. I was in the military, he was in law enforcement, he thought. Just like I thought. I thought I was serving my country, but I was not serving my country. I was serving an agenda that was leading us into one world totalitarian socialist government. I would never have discovered that if I had not been granted a top secret QSI clearance and been attached to the intelligence briefing team of the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet. Well, Joe Bannister wasn't that lucky. He spent a lot of years in his position, and one night he heard D.V. Kidd on the radio talking about the unlawful application of the income tax to the citizens of the several states, and all of the things that they did to persecute people. She talked about
all kinds of things that he had never heard before. He'd been briefed by his superior, his bosses, and he'd been told that so-called, quote, tax protesters, end quote, were raving maniacs, didn't make sense, had hair on their tongue, blabbered and spoke nonsense and all this kind of thing. That they were dangerous, off their rocker, didn't know anything about the law. And he believed what he was told because he did not have any conception. Just like I didn't either. I had no conception whatsoever. No idea that my superiors, he had no idea that his superiors, we had no idea that the government that we were serving would betray us, would lie to us, would actually be in the activity of destroying this nation from within in order to bring about a one-world government. Mr. Bannister, after he heard D.V. Kidd on the radio, contacted D.V. Kidd and began researching to find out if what she was saying was true. And he was hoping that it wasn't, because what he wanted to do was go back and get on the radio and prove all of this stuff wrong. He wanted to vindicate his job. He wanted to feel good about what he was doing. He did not want this to be true at all. What he found out was that it is absolutely true. What he found out was that in his job, he was performing unconstitutional and unlawful acts against his fellow American citizens. He didn't like that. So he began an earnest, in-depth program of research. And he discovered that what I and many other people have been telling you for many, many years is absolutely true. And he was crushed. He was heartbroken because it meant the end of his career. Unless he could make a report of all of the things that he had discovered, submitted it to his superiors, right on up the line to Washington, D.C., and then have them refute it in the law and explain to him where he was wrong. Well, he did this, but they refused to answer any of his questions. They refused to refute anything that he had discovered in his research. They absolutely defaulted. He was an honest man who just wanted honest answers, and he did not get them. So that's what I know about Mr. Joe Bannister. That's what I've learned. So what happened to him basically is exactly what happened to me when I was in the law firm. And I discovered, instead of serving my country like I had planned and wanted to all my life, after 15 years of government service in the Air Force and the Navy, I had been lied to, betrayed. And this is what Mr. Bannister had discovered in his position, also in government service. He'd wanted to serve his country. He'd wanted to be a law enforcement officer. He'd applied to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Internal Revenue Service. And there was a hiring freeze at the FBI, so he was hired as a special agent for the Internal Revenue Service. I have on the telephone at this time Mr. Joe Bannister, and we're going to go right to him right now. Is that you, Joe?
How you doing, Mr. Cooper?
Hello. Welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I'm so happy that you found time to be our guest. And if we don't get through tonight's broadcast, I want to ask you right off the top, if we don't get through all the questions and everything that we need to do, can you come back tomorrow night?
Possibly.
Okay.
More than likely.
Okay, great. I hope that we can, but if we don't, and there's still, you know, because we only have two phone lines, we took all the questions from the audience last night and put them on tape. So what we're going to do right now is just have you, I've sort of given the audience a basic introduction to who you are and what happened to you, very basic, because I don't know everything. I only know what I've heard and what I gleaned from the seminar that you attended in Washington, D.C., what I've read on your website and things like that. But I know that our listening audience wants to hear it from your own lips. So if you would introduce yourself and give your background and how you became an Internal Revenue Service special agent and just go from there, I think that's a good way to start the broadcast.
Okay, well, at the expense of repeating what may have already been said, I'm 36 years old, married with two boys, and a college graduate. I graduated from San Jose State University in 1986. Spent about 3 years at KPMG Pete Marwick, which is an international accounting firm. Then spent a couple of years in the venture capital industry. And then about a year, year and a half into venture capital, I wanted to scratch this law enforcement itch that I had for quite some time. And I also found that basically my accounting job was not very exciting, and wanted to find some more excitement, and applied to both the FBI and the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. And for quite a long time, probably over 2 years, I really thought that I'd end up being an FBI agent, because the application process went very swiftly, and to my knowledge, you know, I passed everything that they threw at me. But then there was a hiring freeze instituted because of, you know, budgetary concerns, and I never ended up getting hired, or at least they never had the authority to hire me. And then about August of 1993, I got a telephone call from the San Francisco office of the IRS Criminal Investigation Division asking me if I'd be interested in a position at the San Francisco office as a special agent. And, you know, I had pretty much had my heart set on being an FBI agent for years, basically. And but I thought, well, there's an agency, law enforcement agency, calling me. They do tax investigations, and I certainly have a lot of tax experience. Why not give it a shot? So I went to the panel interview. I had already taken the Treasury Enforcement Exam. The panel interview went well, and they actually offered me a job. And after a very short amount of thinking, I accepted. And November 15th of 1993, I was sworn in as a special agent for the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Division.
Now, when you say you had tax experience, Johnny, you're talking about your job as an accountant, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And when you became an IRS special agent, what kind of training did you have?
What they do is they send special agents to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. And there I spent 8 weeks in criminal investigator training, and then another 8 weeks in what they call special agent basic training. The 8-week criminal investigator training is where they may put you in with Secret Service agents, customs agents, ATF, put you all together basically just to teach you criminal investigation, constitutional law, investigative techniques.
Constitutional law?
Well, a very basic course, but yeah, they teach, you know, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment.
But nothing about taxes.
Well,
if you'd have read the Constitution about taxes, you all would have had to leave.
Well, I mean, like I say, it was very basic, and they didn't go into significant detail. So that first 8 weeks, you know, do a lot of firearms training and defensive driving, and, you know, it was pretty fun training, actually. And I was elected president of my training class. Ended up with a 95% academic average, qualified as an expert in firearms. So I really enjoyed the training. I mean, it was tough being away from home for all those weeks, especially on my wife, who had to take care of the kids. But, you know, the training was fairly intensive. I was able to skip the tax portion of it because I was a CPA from back in the private sector. And that was one of the ways you could avoid 3 weeks of tax training. So my training was actually shortened by 3 weeks.
Joe, let me ask you something. Based on what you know now, and based upon what I absolutely know now and many years of studying the tax code, do you honestly believe that 3 weeks is enough to train people who are going to go out and apply the tax code to citizens?
Not at all. It's not nowhere near enough. And I mean, it's embarrassing when I think of, you know, I had a 4-year degree, passed the CPA exam, had 3 years at an international accounting firm, and yet I never thought it was necessary to look at the Internal Revenue Code. To look at the filing requirements for who might be liable for a tax or what steps one goes through to become liable for a tax, what the 16th Amendment said, what the history of the 16th Amendment was. None of those things. I had to go and learn that all on my own. You know, nobody taught it to me.
And they get away with that because we're so trusting that the government wouldn't lie to us, that our supervisors would not send us out to do something that was unlawful.
Well, that's true. I mean, I never thought that it was necessary to look for a filing requirement because my parents filed, I filed, everyone I knew filed return. I mean, I just assumed that it was all mandatory for everyone and, you know, that everything that the IRS did, they had the authority to do.
Uh-huh. So then what happened? You finished your training and what happened then?
Well, after training, or during training and after, I basically had 3 years of the most fulfilling job I had ever had in my life.
By fulfilling, what do you mean by that?
Just fun. I mean, just I never looked at my watch during the day. I mean, I'd work 10-hour days because special agents work 50-hour work weeks year-round.
But Joe, I got to ask you something. When a law enforcement person tells me their job is fun, I find it difficult to believe that going out and confronting citizens and maybe getting into gun battles and having to bash down doors and arrest people and investigate the most private parts of their lives, I fail to see where that could be fun. Now, please educate me.
Well, I mean, I'm saying based on my prior mindset, my mindset from the day that I swore an oath was that everything, you know, that the IRS and myself had the authority to do what I was doing, that the taxes that were collected were necessary and useful. And so I felt that I was using my financial skills to fight crime and help the country.
So you felt like I did when I was in the military, that I was helping to fight the battles of my nation and protect and defend the Constitution and freedom and all of those things.
Yeah, so when I say fun, I mean I felt good about what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I felt, the IRS, I didn't live under a rock. I knew they had a bad reputation, but I thought that I was a friendly enough guy and I was fair. And I believed in the Constitution. I was an NRA member from even before I was sworn in. Yeah, I was conscious about constitutional issues, and I thought that I could be put a good face on, at least part of the IRS.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something, and bear in mind, Joe, that I'm not pinging on you. I'm asking these questions because they're in the minds of the listening audience, and I know it, and to be a fair radio host, I have to ask these questions.
That's fine.
But I know where you're coming from because I was in that position with government at one time myself. How could you say or believe that you were being fair when you didn't know anything about the regulations and the laws that you were applying? What is fair?
Well, I guess my answer to that would be, in my mind, I thought that I knew enough.
Okay.
Because, you know, filing requirements, all those things, under my assumption that those questions had been answered long before I ever entered the job, then I assumed. I mean, for one thing, I never really looked into any of these quote-unquote tax protester arguments. I just knew that they were out there, but I never investigated them, at least during the first 3 years of my career. Again, I knew the agency was unpopular, but I believed that the tax was all the things that the average American thinks that it is.
Sure.
And felt that I could, you know, there aren't that many accountants who can shoot well. So I just felt that I was a unique individual who had skills to be a law enforcement officer, but also financial skills.
Okay. And then where did you go at that point? How many years were you a special agent for the Internal Revenue Service?
5.5 in total. First 3 years were as a euphoric person who thought that, he had arrived at the best job on earth.
Uh-huh.
But in December of 1996, that changed when I heard D.V. Kidd on the radio. And yep. I'm assuming you know who D.V. Kidd is.
Yes, I know D.V. I've known her for a long time. And what happened? What did you hear D.V. say that got your dander up, so to speak?
Well, I'd never heard of her in my life. I didn't know who she was. I didn't even know, I guess I could tell she was a female. But she was saying on the radio, it was on a San Francisco Bay Area radio station, saying that the income tax was voluntary for most people. And I thought, as I was listening to her say this, I was driving in my, we call it a G car, you know, with the lights and the siren, and had my handcuffs and my 6 hour 9mm, and this lady is saying that the federal income tax is voluntary. And I would have normally dismissed that right offhand, but she was saying it on a radio station, a radio show that I had been listening to for the couple years prior to that. And they had talked about, you know, pro-gun issues and all the things that I liked. I mean, Constitution, the corruption in the Clinton administration. They seemed to really tell things like they were. They didn't sugarcoat them. They just told the truth. So when this particular host had D.V. Kidd on, obviously what she was saying was completely the opposite of my belief system and what I knew to be true. So it really put me into kind of a quandary. I thought, this lady can't be telling the truth, but why is she on this particular radio show where they've told the truth in the past, at least as far as I can tell? And so the way I solved that little quandary was she had a couple books that she offered. One was called Buy a Bankrupt America, and the second was called Blind Loyalty. And I ordered those books and received them along about beginning of January of 1997.
Blind Loyalty tells the tale, doesn't it?
It made my jaw drop down to the floor. And, you know, I mean, it really just barely touches the surface. But
yeah.
At least I could tell after the 2.5+ years open office now. Just barely scratches the surface of all these issues, but it really blew me away. What I started to do was I did a ton of reading. So much so, I mean, my wife knew I liked to read, but...
What you started to do and what you really wanted to do was prove her wrong, isn't that right?
Yes. I thought, again, she cannot be right. Otherwise, why do I have this gun and badge and handcuffs and bulletproof vest? I mean...
And why would the government allow you to do these things?
Exactly. I embarked on this long, long journey that I thought initially would be very short, because I thought, hey, I'm a CPA, a college degree, I'm a special agent, you know, I should be able to put this stuff to bed in a couple weeks. And 2.5 years later, or actually longer now, was not able to disprove most of, if not all, of what D.V. Kidd said. In her booklet, she'll mention a variety of issues, but one of the people that she mentioned in there was a guy named Bill Conklin. And again, I'm assuming that you know who he is.
Yes, I know who everybody is. I'm one of the ancient veterans of the true patriot movement in this country. We really believe in government, support government, believe in the law, and are willing to die for it. So that's who you're talking to here.
and forgive me for not, you know, I'm fairly new to all of this, and I wish I wasn't.
Well, you heard about me somewhere because you called me.
Yeah, I we talked about that. I got your name from somewhere, but I didn't know much about you, or, you know, don't have a lot of history.
Well, go ahead.
anyway, I called Bill Conklin on the phone. I took the day off of work, and I called him and explicitly said, I've taken the day off work, but I'm a special agent in the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. I'm not calling as a special agent. I'm calling as a concerned citizen. You know, I receive these booklets from VV Kid at my home. I've been reading a lot at my home. This is not an IRS investigation. This is an investigation. And I'd like to talk to you about the Fifth Amendment. And, you say that filing federal income tax returns is voluntary. And I want to find out more about that. And so he sent me all kinds of literature. He sent me his book, Why No One Is Required to File Income Tax Returns. And then I went out and independently verified. I went to law libraries and didn't take his word for anything. I went and checked out what he had to say. And one of the things he did, which I thought was interesting, is he sent me $50 to cover my phone bills because I guess I had mistakenly complained too much that, you know, I was paying for all this on my own because I wasn't doing this under the auspices of the IRS. But basically, after a number of months, he very much convinced me that there was a significant issue with the Fifth Amendment. And it didn't take that much convincing for me because as a special agent, you know, we had to grant people their Miranda rights whenever we talked to them. So apparently, you know, we have to tell them. They didn't have to talk to us. They didn't have to give us any information. And
you really don't have the power to subpoena, do you?
Well, I guess you mean summons?
Summons, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the summons, I've now found out by looking at the parallel table of authorities, you know, who really has the authority to issue summonses.
And the IRS does not.
They're not in there. It's Title 27. Not
That's
Title
right.
26.
So all of you people who have been summoned by the IRS and thought you had to go and went, and because you went and opened your mouth, got in trouble, now you know it was all unlawful. But go ahead, Joe.
Well, spoke to Bill Conklin and, you know, got to be fairly close, at least in terms of him sharing information with me. And so I thought, well, this is really strange. You know, the IRS led me to believe that somebody like Bill Conklin would be drooling and incoherent and incomprehensible because he's a tax protester. You know, and clearly those people don't make any sense. But he made perfect sense to me. And so what I decided to do was call another person in DV Kids books, and his name is Bill Benson.
Uh-huh. The grand old patriarch of the lawful tax movement. See, we're not tax protesters, we're supporters of the law. And when they tell you we're tax protesters, they're making a propaganda ploy so that you won't listen to any of us.
And now that you bring that up, I mean, that's something that I definitely noticed throughout my research and I continue to see is that they have this broad brush approach to, put us all, and I say us because I'm now, I guess, one of those people.
Yeah.
They broad brush and call a kook or crazy or, putting out incomprehensible arguments that don't make any sense.
You know, this is very interesting because, you know, the Internal Revenue Service has issued a warrant for my arrest. Were you aware of that?
There's actually a warrant for your arrest?
Yes. And at some future date, if they ever try to execute the warrant, if you were still a special agent for the IRS, we would have faced each other across a battlefield and I would not have hesitated to shoot you right between the eyes. Not for one second.
Well, I tell you, that's the scary thing is that I've known probably 150 special agents, and the sad thing is that, you know, in my opinion, and based on my research, they're not doing the right thing. They're not part of an agency that's doing the right thing, and I can see why people are as upset as they are, and that's why I'm trying to get out and talk, and so the people on the non-government side or the people that don't work for the government can see that, yes, there are some people in government who are honest and they just maybe didn't know what was going on. And
Well, so far, you say some, Joe, but so far you're the only one that anybody knows about.
Well, in terms of coming forward publicly, that appears to be true. I have met some other revenue officers and revenue agents who don't work for the IRS anymore, who left for the same reasons that I did.
But haven't got the courage of their convictions and won't stand up and talk.
Well, they do. Some of them have told me that they regret not being more outspoken.
Well, they can cure that any day.
Well, I think the people that I talk to, they do speak out, but I guess they don't have the same forum that I've been able to have access to. I don't know if it's because I carried a gun or because I actually issued that report asking for an answer. I'm not sure why, but I tell every chance I get. There's a revenue officer named John Turner here in California.
You have him call me. I'll give him a forum. I'll give any government official or ex-government official who wants to stand up for what's right a forum on this broadcast. I tell him they
Well, John has an interesting story, and I can tell you briefly. His father-in-law was a chief in the collection division and had worked, I don't know, 40, 45 years for the IRS. So when John found out this information, he was devastated, but he couldn't bring himself to tell his father-in-law because it would just crush him. And
I'm sure after all the lives that have been ruined by their actions, sure, it would.
He resigned quietly from his I guess he told his wife, but he didn't tell his family why he resigned after 9 years as a revenue officer. And, you know, I can see where that would be a very tough thing, but his father-in-law has since passed away, and so he is, speaking out whenever he gets the chance.
Okay, well, let's get to your report now. You did all this research, and you called all of these people. And you got their story, and you set off to prove them wrong, and you actually found out that they were right, and you made a report. Tell us about your report and what you did with that.
Well, I had done all years of research here, evenings, weekends, and I did put it all together in a report. I should have thought of it myself, but a friend said, well, you're a special agent. Why don't you just put together a report with all your stuff? And I thought, well, you're right. I mean, I put together facts and evidence and, make a recommendation. And so I just kept putting together all this information into about a 9,500-page report.
9,500 pages. 9,000?
I'm sorry, 95 or 100 pages.
Oh, 95 or 100 pages.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
still a lot of pages.
Well, and it was really, again, just scratching the surface of what I had found, but I really wanted to condense it into three main issues that I presented there.
For a minute, I was worried. See, I have your report.
Uh-huh.
And I was worried that if you issued a 9,500 report, how come I only got... what happens to mine,
No, what you have is probably the one.
Okay.
So I condensed it down into three allegations, the first one being... the income tax, federal income tax is voluntary. The second allegation is the 16th Amendment was never ratified. And the third allegation was that our income tax money does not go towards helping the government to turn on lights and put gas in their cars.
No, it goes to pay the interest for the national debt.
Right.
Is where it goes. In fact, when you get your check back after it's been cashed, if you're smart enough to get it back, a lot of people never get their cash checks back. They're kept on by the bank. But I always make sure that I get mine back. And during the years that I did pay income tax, and you turn the check over and you look at it, it doesn't say pay to the Treasury of the United States of America. It says pay to any Federal Reserve Bank on the account of the United States.
Yeah, in fact, I remember when we had seized funds, I was the asset forfeiture coordinator, and I didn't seize the stuff myself, but then once we had custody of it, I had to take care of the various aspects of it. And we used to take the funds and stick them in the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yeah. Did you know that the United States of America does not have an account with any Federal Reserve Bank, that the account of the United States of America is the Treasury of the United States of America, and every time that the United States of America writes a check, it does not write it on any Federal Reserve Bank check, but up on the Treasury of the United States of America? That's where you got your paychecks from, isn't it?
Well, actually, I guess mine were always electronically deposited, but it does say United States Treasury on the
You better believe it, yeah. Yep, I was in the military for many years. Every check I ever received was written on the Treasury of the United States of America. Not the Department of the Treasury, but the Treasury of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
They were Treasury checks. So depositing the income tax in a Federal Reserve Bank is highly irregular, don't you think?
It definitely got me questioning
things. Okay, where do we go from here? You submitted your review, you wrote your report, what did you do with it then?
Well, about the same time as I was putting it together, I was talking to DV Kidd. I had called her up and said, thank you for ruining my life. I didn't tell her that, but I told her that this had changed my life, and I had researched everything that she had talked about and found it to be true. And so she said, well, what are you going to do about it? And so we talked about this report that I was putting together, and I said, well, I'm going to be confronting somebody about this. I am a sworn federal law enforcement officer. I swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and it looks like I'm going to have to do a little abiding by that oath, and I'm going to have to start bringing this up. So in February of 1999 was the actual D-Day, where I took all of my research and put the report all together and handed it to my immediate supervisor.
And who was that?
If you don't mind, I'd rather not say his name because he's an old friend of my wife's family. And I just...
Yeah, but Joe, you have to understand there's a lot of people out there who don't believe a word you're saying. And if you skirt around naming names, they're going to say that this is all a hoax or something. I mean, you've got to say who this guy was, who you submitted it to. I mean, we can find out if we have to.
Yeah, I'm sure the letters are already all over everywhere anyway. His name is Bob Guarini.
Okay, and what was his position?
He was a supervisory special agent.
Okay, of what area?
Of the Criminal Investigation Division for the Central California District.
Okay. And then, so he saw the report. Where did it go after it was placed in his hands?
He took it to my chief.
Yeah.
His name was Paul Varzel.
Okay. And what was his position?
He was chief of the Central California District of the IRS.
So he was chief of the whole district.
Yes.
And then where did it go from there?
I was told, I didn't follow it that far, but I was told that it went to the Assistant Commissioner for Criminal Investigation, and he answers to the Commissioner.
And did it ever go to the Commissioner?
I wanted it to, but I don't have confirmation that it did.
Okay. And then what happened? What did you do to follow it up, or did they come back to you, or did you go to them and say, what happened with my report, or...
Well, I put a letter with my report where I kind of recounted, my background and experience. So
uh-huh.
I wanted to say once again that I'm not, I think I'm a competent enough person to have put this information together.
Hey, guys, I'm no flake. You hired me. I've been working for this long for you. I've done this, this, and this. I know what's going on here. And
That's right.
That kind
at least one-fourth of it just talking about what the positions I had held and my promotions and all that kind of stuff. Then I went into my oath, and I talked about the different Treasury pronouncements, talking about confidence in the service and faith in its dependability and integrity are factors having a vital impact on our ability to carry out our purpose. Went into the IRS mission statement.
Uh-huh.
That we're supposed to collect the proper amount of tax revenues in a manner that warrants the highest degree of public confidence in our integrity, efficiency, and fairness. Basically all of these things that I used as guideposts to let me know whether or not I was doing a good job. But what I started was I've put this report together, and based on my findings, I find, that a lot of this information is true. I need you to help me find the error of my analysis, if there is any.
In other words, you really wanted the government to come back to you, and I know how this feels. Remember my background. You really wanted the government to come back to you and say, you've been misled, and these people have conned you, and here it is right here, Joe. All you got to do is read this and look at this, and we can explain this over here, and this is how it really is. And what did they do?
The title of my report was a preliminary report. I mean, I really had my hat in my hand and saying, look, I'm not a Supreme Court justice. I'm not an attorney.
Uh-huh.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, and I really don't want to believe this.
I don't really want to believe this, but, I need your assistance here to help me get to the bottom of this. And I did say in that letter, if you can't show me where I went wrong, or if you won't answer me, I'll have to resign because I cannot serve two masters. I swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And if you're going to tell me that you're not going to listen to me, then I can't be here anymore. Well, about a week later, they gave me a memorandum. I was called into my chief's office, and they gave me a very short memorandum. And it said, quote, the Internal Revenue Service will not be responding to your request and will provide you with the necessary paperwork to tender your resignation.
Now, Joe, why in the world would a government agency, if indeed it is, there are many of us who have discovered that it can't possibly be, it's not even listed in the United States Code under Title 31 as an agency of the Department of the Treasury, which by law it must be if it is, and I don't know if you've gotten that far in your research, but it's true. You can look it up yourself. Why in the world would a government agency refuse to support its position in the law when challenged, when it could be so easy to do that and would solve so many problems? For instance, I've been challenging them for years to prove to me that I'm required to file and pay the income tax, and the minute they do that, I will be happy to not only do it, but make up for all the years that I didn't do it, and they still refuse.
Well, and that's exactly what I've been thinking a lot about since February of this year, because they had the opportunity, if they truly want to solve problems, one of the big problems is all this information that's out there that more and more people are learning about and doing something with. And they could have said to me, you know, Joe, you went wrong, you went down this wrong path here, here, and here, and if you had done this, this, and this, you would have come to a different conclusion. I would have very much liked to have that kind of an answer. But even if they would have said, you know what, we're going to make a complete fool out of this guy, he went and risked his reputation as a CPA, his reputation as a law enforcement officer, reputation as an American and a human being, and we're going to make him look like a complete fool because we're going to show how stupid his research was. Well, they chose not to do that either. They simply chose to accept my resignation, which I really just said, if you can't answer me, I'll have to resign. They basically encouraged me to, pack my bags and get out.
Yeah, well, they can't have somebody around that knows the truth.
Ultimately,
you might educate somebody else.
It turns out later on, that report that I issued to them, they sent it back to me, the original report. Apparently they didn't even want somebody reading it there in the files.
So it was never filed anywhere?
Well, I mean, I gave it to them, and I didn't see it for a few months, but...
That's highly irregular. Anything submitted should be on the record and in the files.
And one day in the mail, I got my report back, and it just said, your report, on a little transmittal, IRS transmittal thing.
Wow. Well, that says a lot, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't say anything, but it says a lot, yeah.
Well, it says an awful lot to me. They didn't want it in the file. They didn't want it on the record.
In fact, I heard from Bill Benson recently that there was a doctor, like in Michigan or somewhere back there, she sent in a copy of my report with some other, documentation, and they sent back my report to her, but they kept everything else.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure what's going on.
They kept everything else. They put it in her file as a tax protester. And if she wasn't a tax protester before, she now is.
Yeah, but I guess for some reason they didn't want my report in their file.
It's like the FBI. If you don't have an FBI file, the minute you file a Freedom of Information Act request to find out if you do, that opens a file on you. No, people don't know that, but it's the truth.
Well, I guess in my case, I must have a pretty thick file because the FBI did a background investigation on me before the IRS did.
Oh, welcome to the club. I had a top secret QSI clearance in the Navy. And so I've had an FBI file for many, many years. Joe, what have you learned from all this?
I've learned how to be very depressed about my government.
Well, don't be depressed because it's not our government. Our government couldn't possibly do these things. Our government is outlined in the Constitution for the United States of America. our government is severely restricted and only has a very few powers. This is not our government, so don't be depressed. This is a subversive movement that's destroying this country from within. All you have to do to regain your faith in our government is sit down and read the Constitution for the United States of America, and your faith will come back. And you will stop being depressed. And if you want to, you can join all of us who are fighting this subversion from within.
Well, maybe disappointed is a better word. I mean, I really had this pretty cheery attitude for the first 3 years of my career, and to find out that it was this bad. And of course, I continue to find out, or hear other stories, and see other evidence of just how bad it is and how much they overstep their authority, and then how the courts help them along. It's just very disappointing, but I'm happy to be telling what I believe to be the truth. It's been quite a strange road because I've had people say that I'm a spy, and of course, the government isn't happy with me, so I started to wonder if I'd have even less friends than I have when I was working for the IRS.
Well, I don't know if you know or not, but those of us who have been fighting this battle for a long, long time, we started out with the belief that we could effect a political restoration of constitutional Republican government, and now we know that that's not going to happen, that there's going to be a civil war in this country. So if you were a spy, when this civil war breaks out, your life isn't worth a nickel.
Well, but that's part of the worry, but it's part of the reality of I'm not, but yet somebody makes the accusation, and then I don't have a friend because I left the government job, because I wanted to tell the truth.
Well, you do have friends, and I'm not saying this to cast some kind of aspersion on you that you are a spy. What I'm trying to say is that no person who valued their life would ever do such a thing.
Well, I
there's too many patriots in this country. You would never be able to go anywhere if you were ever discovered to be a spy and be safe. You could not do that. It would not happen. You'd have to leave this country forever.
And I think, I think the people that have made that accusation, if they really think it through, they'd have to question, why, the third chapter of my report is all about the monetary system.
Mm-hmm.
I told it all.
I have your report, and you did. You haven't told it all, but you've told the basics of what you were able to hear initially and research. There's so much more to it. It's the subversion and the tyranny and the treason that has occurred is way beyond your wildest imagination even at this point. You barely scratched the surface. And I would venture to say that you're still, in many ways, in your mind, thinking a lot like you used to think when you felt that you were really serving your country, like I did. I was totally committed. If somebody had walked up to me back when I was in the military and really believed that I was serving my country and just full of the thrill of it all and told me just the slightest little bit of what you and I are discussing tonight, I'd have punched him in the nose.
I think that's what I'm dealing with a lot of the people that I used to work with, is that they want to continue to feel good about what they do or what they've done.
Plus, they sure want to finish out their term and get their retirement check, too. That's a big part of it.
Well, and
retirement is a way of buying people.
I'm afraid you're right. And I was there 5 years and didn't take a nickel away from it, but I wouldn't want it based on what I've learned.
Yeah. Well, Joe, I admire your courage and your honesty. I think that that you're the only, right now, this moment, you're the only person in government that I actually know believed in the oath that he took and was willing to actually support that oath.
Well, I think they underestimated because, I videotaped that oath and I had my mom and my wife and one of my brothers and my oldest son. It was a big day for me. I, taking that oath, and I really meant what I said. and I didn't realize that I'd have to, carry it out quite the way I did.
Yeah, I don't know what your oath said, but mine said to threaten to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Yeah, mine said that too.
Well, fantastic. You know, I submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to get a copy of the oath for Internal Revenue Service special agents, and they refused to give it to me.
Well, actually, on my website, I've got my oath. It's within the transmittal letter that I spoke about earlier. I've got that up on my website, so you can see the oath that I swore to.
Great. Wow, this is just incredible. You know, you're going to have to come back tomorrow night because we haven't even asked any of the questions that we spent all night getting from our audience last night. Can you do that?
You're going to have to let me call you because I'm just not even sure what the calendar holds.
Give me a call. If you can't do it tomorrow night, we'll do it sometime next week or the week after because I have all these questions. We spent all last night's broadcast getting questions from the audience to ask you, because we only have two phone lines here. One goes to WBCQ for our international broadcast. And we're broadcasting concurrently here in the Round Valley of Arizona, 101.1 FM. And we're also picked up by a whole bunch of low-power FM stations across the country. And the other phone line you're on right now. So when I have a guest on the phone, nobody can call in and ask questions. That's the kind of budget we have, so to speak. So what has been the repercussions in your life from this?
It's changed my life significantly. I mean, I'm back. I reactivated my CPA certificate, and I'm back, doing accounting work, which is kind of something I left before for all that excitement of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Things have kind of gotten back to normal for the most part. I mean, I don't. I started the website, and I've had like 120,000 visits to it since March 1st. I think that's helped me to steer clear of any repricing or any kind of dirty pool. I hope that's the reason, because I mean, I haven't experienced.
The more you are in front of the public, the safer you are. If you try to hide, you're dead.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Take it from one who knows. The president called me the most dangerous radio host in America in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air. So I know what I'm talking about. The more you are in front of the public, the safer you are. If you try to go and hide, nobody even knows that you're living, and you can disappear off the face of the earth in a fifth second, and nobody will ever even ask any questions. So stay in front of the public, keep your website, keep doing radio shows. In fact, get your own radio show. Stay in front of the public. That's the only way you'll ever be safe.
Well,
if you're in front of the public and they harm you, it confirms everything you ever said.
Right.
If you disappear and you go into hiding, nobody knows where you are. Nobody knows if you're alive or dead. Nobody knows what happened to you, and you disappear, and I got to tell you, out of sight, out of mind.
Well, so far it must be working because life is just very uneventful.
Okay. What happened to your friends? Did you have a lot of friends in government service?
Yeah.
What happened to them?
Well, the IRS agents are all still working there. I speak to a few of them here and there.
Did they have a conscience?
Well, I guess one in particular didn't say it to me, but he said it to my wife. He said that we don't agree with your ideology. And I thought to myself, I wish he had said that to me, because I would have said, well, what is your ideology? My ideology is that I swore an oath, and my ideology is that the money that I make is mine until there's a law passed that says the government can take it. On and on and on.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a very strange or right-wing or crazy ideology. It's just common sense and decency and, truth and integrity and all those things. And I just thought it was kind of a strange thing for that person to say, because I've always considered him to have...
That's exactly what somebody would say who couldn't support an argument in the law. They have to demonize you. You have some weird ideology.
Right.
It would have been very easy for him, if you were wrong, to show your wife the law.
it shows that you're wrong. But he can't do that.
Which they couldn't do.
No, they can never do it. I know. I've researched it for years and years and years and years. I've been following this fox like a hound since forever. And they never will be able to, because they can't. It doesn't exist. And you found that out.
Well, I'm glad we aren't proposing each other across a battlefield someday, because there's some of us who are committed. I mean, we believe enough in freedom and in the ideals and principles upon which this nation was founded that we're willing to give our lives in defense of the law. And we will not kneel to tyranny under any circumstances whatsoever, not ever.
Well, the founding fathers were the same way.
That's right. And
I have respect for them, so I don't... They had to do what they had to do, and it's a shame because the tyranny won't go away. They just won't. If you ask nicely, they don't just say, "Yeah, you're right. We've been bad. We've been wrong."
No, they don't.
They haven't yet, anyway.
So, what are your plans now?
I don't know. I guess just try to raise my sons to be good men, and try to be a decent husband, and. I don't know, hope that I can spread the word enough that maybe people will wake up, you know, because I do try to have hope. I'm very, Roman Catholic my whole life. I mean, I love God and I love Jesus, and I want to live a nice life, a good life, and I want God to be proud of the life that I lived.
Wow, a Christian in government, that's almost unheard of nowadays.
Well,
how did that happen? Maybe you slipped through a crack somewhere.
No, there's a lot of at least Christians at my old work. I mean, they go to church and they sure don't
take it to heart.
Well, I think they just don't. They haven't taken the time that I took, because it took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And most people, even that don't work in government, I mean, they just don't care. They don't take enough time to look.
Yeah, but they'll go out and persecute their fellow citizens without even the slightest grounding in the law, and yet they go to church on Sunday and claim to be good Christians. I don't buy that. They're not Christians. They're hypocrites, liars. And the worst thing about it is they lie to themselves.
I think, unfortunately, the American people at large, they don't subscribe to that bumper sticker that my brother used to have when he got out of the Army, freedom isn't free.
Yeah.
I think too many Americans, they just think that freedom is free.
Yeah.
You could just go about your life and never pay attention to what your government's doing to others.
So true.
And that's got to change.
Joe, we're out of time. Call me tomorrow. Will you do that?
I sure will.
And we'll make arrangements either for you to be on tomorrow night or sometime next week or whenever your schedule is free, and I'll save this tape of the questions, and when you come back on, we'll just do the questions that night and get that out of the way. And anytime that you've got something to say and you want a forum to say it in, you've always got a place on the hour of the time.
Do you mind if I give out my website?
Well, please do.
It's www.freedomabovefortune.com. That's all one word, freedomabovefortune.com. And it's got my resignation letter. People can kind of get up to speed on what's been happening.
Yeah. Gee, Joe, thanks an awful lot for being our special guest tonight. Thank you so much for being an honest person with integrity and for having the courage of your convictions. That carries an awful lot of weight with me, and I know it does with the majority of the listening audience of the hour at the time.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome, and don't forget to call me sometime tomorrow afternoon between about 12 and 2 in my time.
Okay, Mr. Cooper, thank you.
Thank you, and good night.
Bye.
Well, that's it, folks. You heard it. And we're going to get to your questions. We're going to have him back on either tomorrow night or next week or whenever he's available. And I've got all your questions edited on tape, and I will keep them. And when he's on next, we will ask those questions, and we will get his answers. Folks, I talked to Joe Bannister today. He will be our special guest on Monday night. That's Monday night. So make sure that you don't miss that broadcast. It's going to be an eye-opener. I can't guarantee you that he'll answer all the questions that have been asked that we have on tape here in the studio. In fact, I've got a pretty good idea that he's going to say I don't know to quite a few of them. I also think that maybe we'll hear some revelatory answers to some of the ones that he may have some insight into.
You have to remember that he hasn't been on our side for very long. His mental attitude is that he knows how to coerce you or shame you or make you pay your income tax. And if you absolutely refuse, and if you're classified as a, quote, tax protester, end quote, then he knows how to investigate you, to summons you, even though he didn't have the power to summons, and he knows how to persecute you and arrest you and throw you into prison. That's what he knows. He doesn't know how to get out of doing it. So good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you.
Hi, this is John Lightning. You're listening to WBCQ from Monticello, Maine, in the United States of America.
This is the song. Here for you, that would give me.